97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Straighten that crime in 4 days in D.C. And all they do is they say, he's a dictator. The place, people are getting mugged all over the place. Then they give you phony records like it's wonderful and it's worse than it ever was. But we've got it going. People are so happy. They're going out to restaurants again. I mean, they're so happy.
Yeah, that's President Trump with our friend Todd Starnes just yesterday. He was out with law enforcement officers yesterday, praising them. He talked about going on patrol with them. I don't think that actually happened. But wow, what a difference 6 months has made. And we're lucky enough to have Missouri Senator Eric Schmidt on the phone with us this morning. Senator, welcome back. How are you?
I'm good, Mark. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Do you remember we used to come on my Sunday night radio show when you were a state senator? Remember that?
I do, absolutely. We go way back, Mark Cox.
Yes, we do, sir, indeed. And it's good to have watched your career blossom the way it has. And congratulations on the new book, by the way.
Yeah, no, The Last Line of Defense, How We Beat the Left in Court. It came out this week. It's already an Amazon number one bestseller. So the response has been great. And I actually think your listeners are going to love this book because obviously I'm from the St. Louis area. And the book is really about my time as attorney general and how when President Trump was out of office, it kind of fell to us to be the last line of defense, right? And hold the line until the cavalry could return in November of 2024 when the fever broke. So there's a lot of great stories in there. The mask mandate stuff that I was on your show talking about at the time, the censorship case, the vaccine mandates we took to the Supreme Court we won in the student loan debt forgiveness case. And so it's really a playbook of how we win the future. Everybody can go get it on Amazon right now. I really think Missourians and St. Louisans in particular are going to love this thing.
Well, you know, speaking of that, I mean, obviously, it is about your time as AG. They're about to steal Andrew Bailey from us, and Catherine Hanaway is about to take over that office. I have argued this week, since that announcement was made, that you and then your successor, Andrew Bailey, redefined the role of attorney general in the state of Missouri. I really believe that.
I think that's right, and I think became a national model. I can tell you, other AGs in other states now, when they come to Washington and maybe come by the office, they knew exactly what we were doing. And, you know, you think about the stuff that we did. You know, in writing the book, Last Line of Defense, there's a lot of reflection. I've never written a book before. And you go back, I mean, in the early days of COVID, we sued China for unleashing the COVID pandemic on the world. There's a $24 billion judgment out there right now for Missourians. We took on 50-plus school districts for their mask mandates. We took on ESG. We took on DEI. We uncovered the privilege walks and the pyramids of white privilege that were being pushed around in our schools. All this nonsense that was happening. It was just a crazy time, Mark. It was a pandemic, social unrest. We talk about how we took on Kim Gardner in the McCloskey episode. And then you had the Biden administration come in. And the most radical administration we've ever seen. And so, yes, I think it is a model. The book is, you know, I hope AGs read it across the country, but the book is really written for, like, normal people who saw all this stuff happening and saw these different fronts and how we came together and created a playbook for winning.
Senator Eric Schmidt with us this morning. Have you sent a signed copy of that to Catherine Hanaway, by the way?
I'll make sure I do that. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
I'll do that.
I'm going to have her on here at the bottom of the hour. I'll have to ask her if she's picked up a copy of it yet.
Well, I'd love for Catherine to buy the book, but I will definitely get her one no matter what.
So. That's great. You know, what we're talking about here is the justice system. And when we reflect on the lawfare that the left enacted against Donald Trump when he was in office, after he got out of office, in him trying to get back into office. And then we get this appeals court yesterday throwing out this silly $500 million civil fraud case in New York. What's your reaction to the direction this has taken?
Yeah, I mean, all these bogus lawfare cases have crumbled under their own weight eventually, right? And even the liberal judges on that court question the tactics of Letitia James. And this was a statute that was revived that had never been used in this way. It was meant to bankrupt his family. And of course, you had Jack Smith trying to put him in jail for the rest of his life. And it's interesting. I talk about this in the book. last line of defense you can get right now. Don't get in an accident. Pull over. You can order it when you pull over. But, you know, here's the thing. People forget about this. President Trump, when he announced he was running in the fall of 2022 for president again, 3 days later, a few things happened at the same time. The assistant district attorney in Atlanta went and met with the White House counsel's office. The number three person at DOJ went over to Alvin Bragg's office. And Jack Smith was appointed special counsel in that case, too. So this was a very coordinated effort of lawfare to make sure President Trump never got back in office. And we know why now, right? Look at what they're uncovering. Look at this Russiagate stuff. I think indictments are coming. This makes Watergate look like a third-rate burglary. All of this is the biggest scandal in the history of our country. I mean, it was effectively a coup. So I think, yes, the lawfare was coordinated. And what the left did when they had the power, whether it was COVID or whether it was the Biden administration, we can never let that happen again. And so we have to be willing to stand up and fight back on all fronts. And like I said, I think your audience will love the book because, that was kind of lonely. To this day, when I go to Schnucks, the most frequent comment I get is from a mom, typically, who's like, thanks for sticking up for our kids. When we sued those school districts, Mark, it was the peak day of Omicron. It wasn't on purpose, but it happened to be the peak day of Omicron in January of 2022.
Right.
And we said, this masking is ridiculous. It was lonely. I mean, it was kind of a lonely place to be. It was the right thing to do. But I had reporters interviewing me in their cars with masks on because they weren't allowed in the newsroom yet. And they're asking me, why are you trying to kill the kids? And I'm like, look, a kid is more likely to die of a dog attack than COVID. This is crazy. But looking back on it now, it may seem inevitable that we're going to be in this place celebrating all the victories, but there were some dark days, and I think those are the moments you need real courage, and I think Missouri led the way.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Senator Schmidt with us this morning. We just got the press release from you the other day that more FBI agents are on their way to St. Louis. You know, I've argued all along, Senator, that what the president's doing in D.C., because it's working, is scaring the hell out of these big blue city mayors. Because if he proves that it works there, how do they convince their citizens that they couldn't do it here?
Right. And it is working, by the way, in D.C. They've gone a week, which sadly shouldn't be such a big accomplishment, but a week without a murder. Carjackings are down 85%. Robberies are down 50%. So it's working there. But I will tell you, this is something, as we went through the confirmation process, you know, you have your home state priorities. And so, you know, you're on the news talking about news of the day and stuff, but you have home state priorities that for me with Secretary Hegseth, and then I had dinner with President Trump with the secretary at the White House, specifically about the F-47, advocated for that. A few days later, he announced it's coming to St. Louis. That was a big win. But this is something that I talked to Cash Patel about in the confirmation process. He was talking about getting FBI agents out of D.C. into the field, and I said, I've got the place for you, brother.
Yeah.
These are not paper pushers. These are FBI agents who are going to take on violent crime along with our local partners here. It's the largest per capita increase of a permanent people coming anywhere in the country. And so I think it's a big win, and it can only help, and we need all the help we can get. And I think that there's no substitute. This isn't 2020 anymore. You know, like I saw it as a prosecutor. There is no substitute, Mark, for a law enforcement presence in prosecutions. And another thing that I'll worth pointing out, four people that worked for me in the attorney general's office are going to be the four new district court judges in St. Louis. Seven of the eight will be Trump appointees now in the Eastern District of Missouri. Tom Albus, who was my first assistant when I was AG, is going to be the U.S. attorney. Or is the acting U.S. attorney. He'll get confirmed U.S. attorney in the Eastern District. So we've got some alignment here to actually take on violent crime and some judges who, you know, are law and order judges as well.
It's a great point. Hey, before I let you go, can you confirm or deny that after that congressional baseball game, the Cardinals reached out?
No. Listen, I'm flattered that my stats are so great in the congressional baseball game, and I represent Missouri pretty well, but the bar is pretty low. Let's just put it that way, okay? I got to approach it with a little humility, but yes.
Eric, great having you on again. Thank you.
All right, Mark, take care.
Yeah, we'll talk soon. To Senator Eric Schmidt there, and his book is The Last Line of Defense, How to Beat the Left in Court. It kind of spells out what he did as AG here, and we'll kick that around a little bit with Catherine Hanaway coming up the bottom of the hour. She's going to be officially become Attorney General in early September when Andrew Bailey officially steps away to go to the FBI. So I've got all that coming up, plus our Queen of Hearts drawing right after this.
Benefiting the St. Louis Backstoppers.
Yeah, by the way, we got our winner this morning for the Queen of Hearts raffle. The jackpot, unfortunately, the Queen of Hearts did not get pulled today. The jackpot is up to $4,300 and growing. You have a chance to win half of that if the Queen of Hearts is your card that gets pulled. Now, today, the card was the Three of Spades in slot number 23. So the winner of that on a $5 bet is going to win $25. You can buy the tickets at $5 each. If you buy five, you get one free. Here's the great thing about it. This is the fantastic thing about this. All of the money goes to Guns N' Roses. So you can get on there and buy your tickets, and then the money will end up going to Guns N' Roses and ultimately Backstoppers. And, of course, the tickets are already on sale for Guns N' Roses. I think they went on sale August 1st. So get your tickets. It's going to be fantastic, and we are very proud to be the official radio sponsor for Guns N' Roses this year. Love helping out those first responders. So get on there and buy those tickets, please. You know, I mentioned this a minute ago, this disaster with Cracker Barrel. Have you guys been paying any attention to this? Yesterday, the CEO was on national media. She had to go on ABC News to defend what all the changes they're making to this just piece of American fabric, this restaurant. Go to cut six, please.
Honestly, the feedback's been overwhelmingly positive that people like what we're doing. I'll give you another soundbite. I actually happened to be in Orlando last week with all of our managers. We bring them together and every other year. And the number one question that I got asked, Michael, was, how can I get a remodel? When can I get a remodel? How do I get on the list?
Oh, really?
So because the feedback and the buzz is so good, not only from our customers, but from our team members.
It's been really good. The feedback's been really good from our team members. Who cares what your team members think? What like, I can't imagine the marketing manager at Bud Light went to the team members and said, hey, how would you feel about me having a transvestite promote our product? What do you think the reaction would have been to that? So the problem here is that Cracker Barrel's gone kind of woke. I mean, that's part of the problem. It's not the changing of the logo, although I don't see why you would do that, quite frankly, or the updating of the colors in the stores or changing some of the products they offer. It speaks to a bigger issue. There's a guy named Pete Seat, who was actually on CNN last night talking about this and said, not a Republican or Democrat issue. It's just shooting yourself in the foot kind of thing here.
I think it's wrong to paint this as MAGA world is outraged. Sure, there are people in that sphere that are, but I've seen a lot of folks who have no allegiance or alliance to MAGA that have complained about this. And why? It's because there's a resistance to change, specifically a resistance to changing things that aren't broken. And Cracker Barrel works because Cracker Barrel is consistent. When you go on a road trip, you know that you're going to get good food at a good price at the next exit. And you can go in and you have the kitschy decor. It makes you feel like you're at home or in grandma's living room. That's what people want. They don't want bland, boring, cookie cutter, minimalist places that feel like fill-in-the-blank fusion restaurant.
You don't think that's a good explanation? I saw you nodding your head, Ethan.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with him. You want something that you're used to. And
I think
everything's just going to be completely different. I don't know. The pictures I've seen of the inside of these places, they just look boring.
It just looks
boring.
What they've done is they've taken a pencil and they've erased the character out of the Cracker Barrel, right? They've erased the old man sitting by the Cracker Barrel on the logo, And some of these suggested replacements are gold, if I can just tell you that. Social media has had a ball with this. One, I just shared the one that shows President Trump sitting in the rocking chair with his arm on the Cracker Barrel. Make Cracker Barrel great again, right? Or the one that showed Sydney Sweeney, and it said she's the only person in America that can now save Cracker Barrel. They won't be smart enough to do it, but they should do it. To me, I'm with him. It's not just a matter of trying to update your brand, but you have to have a feel for who your audience is, right? You do. You have to know that. The Bud Light lady had no clue. She just cared about her woke ideology and thought, hey, let's have Dylan Mulvaney's face on the front of this and let him do some social media. He's an influencer. Well, he's not influencing the people that drink your beer. I got some really bad news for you. You should have thought that one through a little bit. Go and test that idea with the people on the floor at the brewery before you go out and do something dumb like that. And I have a hard time believing that all those Cracker Barrel general managers across the country who this morning woke up to their stock holdings down about $25 million is what Cracker Barrel stock dropped yesterday after this hit the fan. And, you know, once you've remodeled the store, you're going to go back and put all that stuff back? No. So the damage is done. And then we're finding out more about their woke DEI policies inside of the company. I think that they one more quality American brand down the crapper. I'm afraid. I don't know how else you put it. I mean, I'll still go there and have some pancakes, but it's disappointing that they would do something like that. Coming up, we're going to talk to Catherine Hanaway. She's the next attorney general for the state of Missouri. Stay tuned.
This morning, I'm happy to announce the role of attorney general is incredibly significant in our state. And serving as the chief legal officer for the state, the attorney general, as you know, is the top cop. It is not lost on me the incredible importance of selecting the right person for this job, and my team and I took this selection very seriously. We wanted the most qualified person who is ready to work on day one. So today, I'm proud to announce the next Attorney General of Missouri, Catherine Hanaway.
All right, that was the governor's announcement, and we are fortunate enough to have none other than Catherine Hanaway on the phone this morning, incoming Attorney General for the state of Missouri. And Catherine, welcome back. How are you?
I'm great. It's been too long. I'm super happy to be with you, and obviously it's been quite an exciting week for the Hanaway family.
Well, I would say so. Well, you snuck off into private practice, and I just didn't have as many reasons to get you on the radio, right?
No, for sure, and I wasn't going on the radio because I was leading a law firm that's 1,200 lawyers and 25 cities, and, you know, it was taking quite a bit of time.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, I got some good news for you here right off the bat. I just had Eric Schmidt on the radio here at the top of the hour, and he promised to send you an autographed copy of his new book, The Last Line of Defense, which he wrote about his time as AG. How about that?
I can't wait, and I will take a lot of guidance from it. And I see Eric most Monday mornings at the gym. I won't say which gym, but he's hitting it hard these days.
Well, he showed it. Showed at that congressional baseball game. Apparently, he was one of the stars up there for that. So that's a good thing. I know your relationship with him goes way back. I mean, I think you and I met probably, God, should we talk about it? 30 years ago when you were working for Senator Bond. So it's been a long time.
Yeah, some of my friends have asked me to stop saying how long I've known them because they think it makes them look old, but I'm proud of him. As Roy Blunt likes to say, you can't make new old friends, and so I'm glad to count you as an old friend.
Well, thank you for that. You know, about this role as AG, I made this observation to Senator Schmidt that I believe between he and Andrew Bailey, they've kind of elevated and redefined the role of Attorney General in Missouri because they both kind of taken on some national issues head on. Do you plan to operate the office in a similar fashion?
So what's made that possible is that they have gone out and recruited from around the country the very finest lawyers they could possibly get to come to Missouri to lead that sort of constitutional litigation. I'll put it in that bucket generally. And those people all work in the Solicitor General's office. And my first call to anyone on the staff was to the Solicitor General to make sure that he's going to stay. He's recruited some wonderful people, additional people who are moving to Missouri. And I really want to keep that team intact so we can keep doing that really important work.
Yeah. We're talking to Catherine Hanaway, who will be the next Attorney General of the state of Missouri. What's your swearing date? Early September, right?
Yeah, September 8th. So for my partners at Hush Blackwell, it seems like it's right too fast. And for the people in the AG's office, they want me to hurry up and get there.
Yeah, yeah. So what are some of your priorities? Clearly, you've had a few days to think about this now.
Well, and it's an office that I have thought about a lot throughout my career because I've done so many things that pertain to it, whether it's Speaker of the House or being the chief federal law enforcement official for the eastern half of Missouri as U.S. attorney. And so number one, without question, is to fight crime in Missouri, to reduce the rate of crime, and to do that in collaboration with local prosecutors, police, sheriffs, the highway patrol. That's job one, priority one. Nothing we do will be more important. But beyond that, there are a couple of things that maybe haven't been as much at the forefront of what the AG has been doing lately, and that is protecting consumers from anybody who defraud them. For example, we should have a tornado recovery task force to make sure that, like, roofers and insurance companies that are ripping people off as they try to recover, that they're getting legal action taken against them if not prosecuted. Medicaid fraud, anybody who would like abuse or defraud the elderly. Like, we are the state's lawyer. We represent the state on a lot of things, but we are the people's lawyer too. And I would really encourage people, you can just go to the website for the Attorney General and find out how you report times that you think that you've been ripped off or abused. That's a core function of that office. And then we do all the criminal appeals in the state, and that's a heavy workload. So there's plenty to do, but I want to focus on protecting Missourians, whether it's from violent crime or whether it's from financial crime or whether it's from somebody who would try and deny them their constitutional rights.
Yeah, it's good. It's a good point. And we just learned that more FBI agents are on their way to St. Louis. I mean, that's a good sign. So you have that help from the federal government. I don't know if you have any comment on what the president's been able to accomplish in a short period of time in D.C. just by putting more boots on the ground.
Yeah, it's just amazing that we haven't learned this lesson in St. Louis and Kansas City and around the state. If you look at New York City, that went from a crime-ridden, just kind of black hole, teetering on the verge of bankruptcy in the 1980s, to what it got to be, and it's, you know, some question as to whether they're backtracking. But if you walk around New York City, there is a visible law enforcement presence at all times. It deters crime. We don't want to just prosecute crimes. We want to prevent them. And I think that's exactly what the president's doing in Washington, D.C. Like, it shouldn't be any shocker that criminals don't want to commit crimes within eyesight of law enforcement. And so if you put law enforcement out on the street in a visible way, you reduce crime. It's a simple formula.
Well, and hopefully one that resonates in some of these big blue cities around the country, including St. Louis and Kansas City, when they see that it works,
sorry,
right?
To get a little worked up on that point, Mark, but it's just one of those things. Like, it seems like you can't fix stupid. Like, this is a clear solution to a big problem.
You know, Catherine, I watched the news conference when the governor made the announcement and some of your original comments, and then I walked out of the room, and then I walked back in, and you were answering a question about glyphosate. Did a reporter ask that question? What was the nature of that? Did you represent Bayer in your private practice?
Yeah, I did represent Bayer, and I'm really proud of the work that we did in supporting farmers and the agriculture community. They put a bill in front of the legislature the last couple of years that says whatever the FDA says is required in terms of a warning is all that you have to have in Missouri to stop these lawsuits, because, you know, it doesn't cause cancer. Even California doesn't require it to put on a warning. And so, you know, and California requires everything to have a warning, including Disneyland. So I went down and I testified before the legislature in support of that bill, as did every ag group in the state.
Yeah. Yeah. We talked about that a little bit here on the show. And I mean, I know there were some people concerned that it was giving them blanket immunity against lawsuits.
Yeah, it really doesn't. You can still sue them for negligence or, you know, any of the other things, just not failure to warn when the federal government is telling them they can't put a warning on their product.
Sure, sure. Well, we're looking forward to seeing what you do with the office. Do you envision yourself? I know you're your own person. I'm not saying you're going to emulate somebody else or copy them, but do you see yourself in the role like Attorney General Bailey has been, out front, forceful on all these local issues from school districts to, you know, hiring superintendents and paying them for no working?
Yeah. So obviously I am very supportive of going after any public official who's abusing their office. And I think that Andrew Bailey really reinvigorated that sort of public integrity section, which I think is critically important. The issues that I'm going to face won't be precisely the same as Andrew Bailey, but I think what we'll have in common is that it will be a very active and aggressive office.
Very good. Well, Catherine, congratulations. Great to have you on and looking forward to talking to you more once you're sworn in.
Yeah, thanks so much, Mark. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, take care of yourself. Catherine Hanaway, incoming Attorney General there for the state of Missouri. So good to get her on here this morning. I'm sure we'll be hearing more from her once she gets sworn in on the 8th of September. She's been involved in so many different levels of Missouri politics. It'll be interesting to see how she handles this role for sure. All right, coming up, we're going to talk to Mark Schmitz. You know him, father of Lance Corporal Jared Schmitz, the American hero who died at Abbey Gate. He's been doing great things for veterans. We'll check in with him when we come back. All right, welcome back, and happy to have our friend Mark Schmitz back on the air, father of Lance Corporal Jared Schmitz, the U.S. Marine killed in that deadly bombing at the Kabul Airport in Afghanistan. And Mark, you've done such great work with the Freedom 13 in honor of your son. Welcome back, my friend.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I know the fundraising for what you're trying to do goes on constantly because you've got a big idea, and it's going to take a lot of money to support it. You've got a memorial ride coming up as well, right, on the 30th?
Yes, sir. A week from tomorrow, weather is looking to be in the upper 70s. So
oh.
Perfect day to be outside and take a ride, whether you're in a motorcycle, car, Jeep, truck, all are welcome. It is a ticketed event, but there are 13 different launch points. The furthest one away is Evansville, Indiana, of all places, and they're bringing at least 20-plus people. We've got a bunch in Illinois and a bunch in Missouri. You can check our website, thefreedom13.org, for launch point locations. But most of them are Harley dealerships, but there's some VFWs, et cetera. But, yeah, it's going to be fantastic. We had a massive turnout last year, somewhere in the 600, 700 range. This year we're forecasting between 1,000 and 1,500 probably. So it's going to be big. And we do have two live bands when they show up at the Jefferson Barracks Park Amphitheater.
Yeah.
Trixie Delight will be playing and Horns Up will be playing. We have food trucks. Bring the family. It'll be a great day.
Yeah. The ride from whatever point it starts ends at Jeff Barracks, right, at the amphitheater?
Yeah, all 13 points are going to converge on South County Mall, and that's where they're going to hook up with the big giant wrap semi-truck that's got all 13 heroes on there, and it'll have a police escort from there to Jefferson Barracks.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's only $30 if you sign up in advance. There's still time to do that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Day of, it goes up to 40, so save yourself $10 and sign up today.
Yeah, good. I hope people do that. Freedom13.org is the website, thefreedom13.org. Maybe make sure I say that right. Talk a little bit about the rest of the dream, that what you're doing here with the 501c3 and building these recreational retreats around the country.
So on the grand scale, where you want to do a freedom camp in every single state. So that'd be 50 states, 50 camps. Each camp will be at least 100 acres of land. That's over 50,000 acres nationwide. And each camp will have 13 houses. So that's 650 houses nationally. That would service over 33,000 veterans and or police. on an annual basis. And the one that we started here in Missouri first, since we're from here, is in Bourbon, Missouri, on 171 acres. We already have two houses up. We have 11 more to build. So we're definitely looking for sponsorships and help from lumber companies and building contracting companies, et cetera, to get that done. But we're working with a local guy, David Myers. He's the owner of B Green Builders.
Yeah.
And small outfit, but I'll tell you what, these small companies are the ones that are really stepping up huge. He's going to do close to $250,000 of land grading and not charge us a dime. All I have to do is fill up his gas tank.
What a great guy. Dave is a great guy, and he wears a kilt a lot better than you and I do.
That's right. You wouldn't catch me in one, but he looks good in it.
Yes, he does. He's a fantastic human being, and you've got a lot of people that are chipping in like that, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, we could always use more of this.
Right.
These camps are probably going to be $3 to $4 million, depending on how much, you know, if we get the land donated, obviously that saves a huge chunk of money. But moving forward in other states, that is. But, you know, it takes an army to make this happen, and that's an army of volunteers. It's not an army of donors. You know, so it definitely takes a lot, and we're definitely in need of help, for sure.
You know, it's hard for me to believe, but I'm sure harder for you to believe, that we're approaching the fourth year now that you've been without Jared, and maybe you can reflect on that.
Yeah, you know, it gets a little tougher every year. It shouldn't be the way it is, but it is the way it is. You know, I woke up this morning and was thinking to myself, come Tuesday, that sunrise I see and everyone sees, that was the last one my son saw 4 years ago. You know, it's a little details like that that just really pulls at my heartstrings and makes it challenging. But, you know, overall, the family's doing pretty well. You know, we all deal with our grief differently. But for me, my therapy is our Freedom 13 organization. That's what makes me get through each day. But it's tough. You know, we're actually scheduled to go have a 3 o'clock meeting in the Oval Office on Monday with President Trump to mark the anniversary of their murder in Kabul. And hopefully Pete Hegseth and Marco Rubio will be in attendance as well, because we'd love to start getting some input on what's going on with the investigation, because that seems to always fall through the cracks, and need to get some accountability, not just for our family, but all the veterans out there that want to know what the hell happened.
Please let us know when you get an update on that, because we'd all like the answer to that as well. Mark Schmitz, thanks for all you do. TheFreedom13.org. You can get those Angels of Abbeygate Memorial Ride tickets on his website that's coming up next week. Sir, thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
All right. Take care of yourself. Mark Schmitz there. Always great to get him on. He's just doing such good work in memory of Jared Schmitz. We love helping him out any way we can. TheFreedom13.org. All right. It's going to do it for us on this Friday. The Kilmeade Show up next, as usual. We'll get Annie and Mark in here this afternoon to finish out your Friday. Have a great week. Keep it tuned right here to 97.1 FM Talk. And I'll be back on Monday morning. See you then.
Get more at 971talk.com.